This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! But mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motor Mouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
You haven't found the love train. You found the car train, the auto train, the Motor Mouth Radio train with your hosts, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. The only show where you can talk about your car problems and concerns, and you can dance too, like my co-host is doing right now, aren't you, Chris?
I am on the love train, baby.
I see.
Look at me training the love.
You were in the sleeper car until a few minutes ago, but now you're up. I got you. Very good.
All right, Ray. We are here on the fountain, the fireworks, the explosive fountain of knowledge that we have here at Motor Mouth Radio. Just not that many questions.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll change that today.
Yeah, we'll try. We'll try. And
we'll try.
People can get in on the fun with us. You can give us a call at 516-572-7440. And
yes.
We'll talk to you about all your car concerns and whatnot. Well, mm-hmm. Dodge bottle rockets and flying whizzy things.
Basically, it's the conversation that we have with each other, the flying whizzy things.
That's right.
For sure. I have come to realize I want to start this week off with the fact that I am freaking clairvoyant.
Oh, yeah, huh?
I am clairvoyant, Ray.
Tell me.
Do you know why? I will tell you. I can make weather happen. I can make the earth move. I can fly like a bird in the sky.
Oh,
I can
do
everything. Anyway, so here's what
happened. Too bad you can't sing.
I can't sing. I was sitting with my wife, and we were chatting about what is coming up this month in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's the Chrysler, the Mopar Nationals. And
it's
the holy grail of my C-body brethren, the individuals that drive these big fat Chryslers that I am learning to enjoy the company of. But they all get together and they all meet at this Chrysler Nationals.
And they all say, I can't get parts. Can you get parts? I can't get parts. I can't get parts either.
That's exactly what we do. Get the crying towels out because that's what we do. Well, anyway, I said to my wife, if there are any Chrysler 300 seats at Carlisle, I am going to get in my vehicle and drive down there and purchase them and bring them back.
Yeah.
And then we both had a very good laugh over it. How silly is that? Who will possibly bring Chrysler 300 seats from 1969 to Carlisle, Pennsylvania?
Mm.
Well, here I am on the C-Body site. I'm looking at it this morning. This morning, I'm looking at it, and it says someone is going to have a set of front bucket seats with the headrests and a rear bench.
Wow.
And they're going to be taking it over to Carlisle if anybody wants them. And now I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'll go. But meanwhile, I'm cleaning out my.
I know.
I can't afford to get new things.
Well,
especially new big things.
Not only
I'm
that,
trying to clear stuff out.
Wow. And the question I have though is, any idea of what the guy's asking?
Yeah, he's asking a lot.
Yeah, right. Because that stuff doesn't go cheap.
No, it doesn't. And you know, the funny thing is, this is something we've always talked about. For some reason, when you look at seats from a General Motors vehicle, most likely that haven't been really damaged or abused. A lot of times the seats and the seat material is fairly intact. GM and even Ford to a certain degree have used very good material compared to Chrysler.
Naugahyde.
Oh my gosh. The Naugas weren't that good.
No.
The Naugas in the late 60s were just not that good.
And GM used Morikide. That was
The Morris. Do the Morris get along with the Naugas?
I don't know. I've never seen them in their native habitat.
I never watched it. Usually 6 o'clock in the morning. You remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom?
Marlon Perkins. Right.
Yeah. You know, never had a, you know, that his cohort never had to fight the Naugas.
No.
Or the Morris.
Not that they showed, at least.
No. It was a family program.
Well, in this case, in your case, if the cost is anywhere within your means, I say you got to make an exception. You know, you have to, because what else are you going to find, you know, that a deal like that?
You're right. And that's the problem. And, you know, it's very funny. I married the right woman because she said the same thing.
Yeah.
She was like, you should go get them. And I'm like, but I got to move them.
Well,
I got to move them.
You got a truck.
I know.
But you got a garage. You got two garages.
Yeah.
Right?
No, that is true. That is true. We're going to have a second one.
Hey, listen, you got space. What do you mean?
I got space between my ears. That's what I got.
That's true.
This is something, you know, it's very funny because I don't know if I remember telling you this. I don't remember telling you if I have mentioned this. My dad used to laugh when I talk about Chrysler products. He'd go, fat chance you finding anything. You're never going to find the soft stuff for these cars. It's impossible to restore them. And I used to say, Dad, anything can be found. It's not a problem. Oh, no, you're never going to find. You know what? He was right.
Yeah.
This stuff is impossible.
As he would tell you if he could right now, he'd kick you in the butt and say, yeah, you know, you should have listened to me, you moron.
Yeah, he probably would have said just that. After a good hearty laugh.
Now stick to the caddies, you jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, the caddies were easier. Caddies, finding stuff for the caddies were easier.
Yeah. I'll tell you, if you want to find parts for an Oldsmobile, you'd be in luck.
Oh. Oh, maybe I can get some Oldsmobile buckets in my car.
I have.
What do we have?
Ooh. I got before me the sheet. Yes. Our good friend Bob had passed this over to me. The spring dust-off, the 2001 spring dust-off for the Oldsmobile Club is in effect. It's going off on July 18th this year at Fortown Fireman's Training Center. That's where I used to do the Father's Day show back years ago on Merrick Road, America.
When you were just an old crank.
Yeah, I was one of the three old cranks. And let's see, it's their 45th show, the 45th annual show. And if you want to contact them, you can go to li-nyc-oldsclub.com. I think we may have a link to this on our website. Mm. And it's hosted by the Rinky Dinks race team, who Christian knows very well. That's from the North Belmore Volunteer Fire Department. That's how they get the field. That's the secret right there. And they do have some vendors, and there's always some parts out there. So if you're looking for old stuff, if you want to switch camps, I'm just saying.
You know what?
So if it's Delta 88, you know?
May not be a bad idea.
Yeah,
there was when we were doing the show from the studio where you are now. When I was in there with you, you would pass by on. I'm trying to think of the street on the avenue. Is it Stewart Avenue? There was an Oldsmobile convertible sitting there for the longest time.
Yeah, we stopped and looked at it once. Yeah, it's right over here in Garden City. Yeah, I don't know if it's still there anymore.
Right, but I remember it just sat there, and it minded its own business. No one went near it.
I think it was probably one of the guys from one of those companies who had the ability to just park his own car there and say, you know what, I'm just going to leave this here for a while, leave it alone.
Yeah, he sure did.
And it's a patrolled area. There's police all up and down there.
I'm always thinking he should have put a for sale sign in the window. Could have gotten snapped right up if that was the case.
Well, like us, he may not have wanted to sell it. He just needed to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
I always have stuff I need to put somewhere.
Well, I know that's where you and I differ, because if I am stuck with that situation, that stuff that I need to put somewhere instantly goes up for sale.
Yeah, good idea. Smart man.
It needs to go up. And here's the funny thing. Because I'm doing a lot of moving around, I'm working on those door panels to put onto the 300. And I've come to realize that I can't take too much time to restore these door panels. I have a plan. I know what I need to do, but I've come to realize this plan has to be executed lickety split. It's got to happen right now.
Right.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm in the process of cleaning and restoring at the same time.
Yeah.
And I've come to realize this. If you take 3 weeks to do a job or you take 20 minutes to do a job, 9 out of 10 times, job turnout is going to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like packing. When you're packing for a vacation, you can either take 3 weeks to pack or you can take 20 minutes to pack. One way or another, you're going to get packed.
Right.
You're going to get packed and you're going to have most of the stuff. The outcome will be the same.
And if you need a toothbrush or a t-shirt, you can buy it wherever you are. Buy it. Right.
Right. Exactly. You got a credit card. That usually takes care of all the hygiene.
Right.
So yeah, this is where I'm at right now. And I've come to realize I get really good when I'm working swiftly, not rushing.
All right.
I'm rushing, right? Working swiftly. I had to cut out a piece of vinyl that I found off another piece because I'm using other door panels to restore these door panels. And there was a chunk that was actually missing because that's the quality of Chrysler products.
Yeah.
There was literally a chunk of vinyl missing and I actually cut a piece out and fit it in there. And I only had about maybe 40 minutes to do this job when normally I would have taken about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It took about 40 minutes and cut, fit, cut. Got it. Perfect.
Nice.
Perfect. Going to glue it in. It's going to be done. Everything's going to be fine. And then I'll go over it with what I'm using to fill in the seams, fill in the cracks. The, chair, the leather, it comes in tubes. It's a leather repair kit and you can mix colors.
Okay. Yeah.
Of certain leather. I've used it on, we have a leather, love seat upstairs that's got a worn out arm. And I've used it on this worn out arm with remarkable results. So I'm trying it on the door panel. It's working pretty well.
Good.
It's working pretty well. It's working surprisingly well. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but it's working surprisingly well. So now I'm on my last panel with the last chunk and I'm very happy because I got about 40 minutes today to work on it.
Nice.
So
that's good.
But working swiftly is giving me the same results in automotive restoration as taking my time doing it.
Right.
So that's my advice. I'm leaving. I'm done.
And I'll tell you, our good buddy, Chassis John, who's down in Florida, he's listening to us right now. He's working swiftly, too. He's made some forward steps with his welder. He had a little bit of an issue that he didn't know he had. And once that got resolved, it's like, man, now the guy's cranking out some crazy stuff. Bought a new helmet and all. Like, wow. It's good to see other people when they progress and all of a sudden get new traction and newfound forward motion in a project, because it actually helps me out. You know, it's like, you know what, that kind of gives me hope that, hey, maybe I could get some of that too, you know?
Maybe. Sometimes, but what project, your project's done.
No, you know what, projects are never really done. That's the thing. That's why it's a project. It's never done. No, but I have other small projects going on. There's always something. You know, Mike handed me a milk crate full of buffer polishes the other day that aren't working. He's like, hey, maybe you could get these working. I'm like, okay. So
wow,
I'm looking online for like diagnostic information, because you pull them apart and there's a power comes in, there's a switch, but then there's like a block. It's a module. And the module controls the speed. So, okay, if the thing is dead, that module can be bad. How do I test it? So,
yeah, I have no clue.
You know, there's five wires. There's like a red, black, white, green, and blue. Okay, what do they do? And I need to know where I can take measurements so I can see if I'm getting in and out. And so far, I haven't found that information. So without that, you just, and I looked up the module. I looked it up by part number. And $50 on Amazon. It's like, all right, so it's not something you just want to buy casually and throw in the thing, you know, when it may be something less.
Why not? Well,
I mean, if that's the problem, $50 gets you back, gets a couple $100 buffer back up, then it's worth it. But on spec,
then it's worth it.
You know, you're like, oh boy, you know, it's like, what if that's not it? You know, you don't want to be.
No, exactly. And this is where you and I are always we come at each other, because I always feel, what's your time worth? Is your time worth the diagnostics the time it takes you to do the diagnostics maybe take you a couple of hours. Yeah, you will decide what will work, what's working, what's not working, when you could just buy the part, wait for it to show up, slap it in there, and all right, that wasn't the problem. All right, let's move on. Maybe, well, or it was the problem. Put it back together. You got a buffer.
That'd be great. Well, the thing is, though, you know, it's an electrical part, so it may not be able to be returned because this thing is all hardwired in. So that's going to be a $50 loss that you have to explain to the guy who, you know, whose buffer it is. You don't want to, you know, you just don't want to. It's one thing if you have, you know, if you just change it a couple little pieces or something you can futz around with, that's one thing. But change a component like that, it's a whole nother level. That's why the diagnostics are key. You want to have a direction to point in. And that certainly is a direction that I could point at and say, hey, if that thing is bad, this buffer won't work. That's very true. But there's other things, too. So, you know, I'm trying to find that diagnostic tree that'll let me go in those different directions, and I haven't found it yet. So I don't know. And I know that the manufacturer isn't going to put that up because that takes away from their repair. But, you know, usually there's secondary guys, and at my first go-around, I didn't find that. So I have to dig deeper.
What's the brands of buffer? Are they're not like just Black and Decker?
Well, no, there's a Makita.
Ooh, okay.
I didn't take the first one is a Snap-on buffer, but it has a different tail section on it, a yellow tail, which looks like it would be like a DeWalt. So all this stuff is probably made the same by the same companies. So there's that one, there's a Makita, and I don't remember what brand the third one is. They're all name brand stuff.
Okay.
You know, and these were used at a body shop, so they get used hard, they get used a lot. I mean, you pull them apart, they're just caked with goo and fuzz and so cleaning it, you can spend a half hour just cleaning the damn thing. You know, really, it's crazy. Yeah.
Goo and fuzz.
Yeah. Well, you know, all compound and wax debris, dust, yuck. You know, it's a body shop.
No, don't want to find that in your hamper.
No, you don't. So that's always fun. But and the same thing, like I was just telling you before the show, the Grand National in the shop, we found that the car was going to overheat on us. The cooling fans didn't come on. So I did some quick diagnostics. I did the diagnostics that I knew in my head. I said, okay, let me pull the fan relays. Once I found out which ones they were, and I jumped the sockets manually, and I saw the fan come on in low and high mode. So I said, okay, I know the sockets are good. I know the wiring up to them is good. I know the fan is good. The problem is the way it gets controlled through the car is through with the coolant temperature switch through the ECM, the computer. The computer commands the relays to close and activate. So now I have to diagnose that side of the house, which is a whole other ballgame. So I reached out, of course, to our eye in the sky, Joe D.
Yep.
And Joe sent me some flow charts and some other stuff that I have to disseminate and go through. And with a scan tool, I'm going to try and do it with the scan tool. That you do what's called bidirectional control. Mm. And what that is, it's really cool. If you've ever done it, it's you feel like God, you know, because you're sitting behind the wheel with the scan tool and you're in the menu and you're like, okay, coolant fan on low. And you press on, and the fan comes on. And you say off, boom, and it goes off. Then you say hi, and it comes on, and off, and it goes off. And you can do that with a lot of different components in the car. You can do it
to check their operation, make sure they're all working properly. Yes,
bidirectional, meaning going two ways. So from the scanner, you can tell that computer, make that thing go on. And if it doesn't, now you know you have a problem. There technically could be a problem between the scanner and the interface, but
sure.
But if you're in that mode and you're at that point, already you know the scanner is talking to the vehicle, so you discount that. So then you got to go further and say, okay, is there a wiring issue with the computer, or is it a bad computer? And there's ways to diagnose that. So again, it's all to make the technician more effective and take less time throwing darts at a thing and actually honing in on the problem. So we'll play with
what's
of that.
Do you know offhand what the mileage on the Buick is?
73,000, I believe.
Yeah, because I would say if it's a little bit more, I would just change the coolant temp sensor in the engine and then start the diagnostic process.
Well, the temperature sensors on the intake manifold, I want to know how to, again, you can usually test those things. You can test it for a range, and sometimes there's a resistance reading you can take with an ohmmeter. Usually on a voltage reading with something like that. A lot of sensors, they work like wheel speed sensors that work with frequency, so you use a frequency meter or a scope, and you can actually see the pattern the thing is put. You just spin the wheel and you watch the meter and say, okay, we're getting an output. You know, again, that's just a way of knowing, are you alive or are you dead? Yep. Right. And the meter's saying, okay, now, so when you say, okay, it's alive, but is that the alive pattern I should be seeing? Like your cardiologist, like, okay, I see a pattern on the screen, but guess what? You're almost gone. Because he knows that pattern is not a healthy heart pattern. Just like, you know, it's not a healthy wheel speed sensor pattern. So
right.
There's libraries of that stuff out there that you could tap into and look at. So, so that's kind of what we do. And, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
I would like to know the time it takes to make that diagnosis, how much time it took you to go from A to B. I would like to know, just out of curiosity, ballpark figure, just because I always like to set a figure, mm-hmm. a dollar amount to every hour you spend working on that vehicle, mm-hmm. and then add that in to the cost of the repair.
Well, yeah, it's what a customer has to encounter, sure.
Right, sure. So, I mean, yes, you have to do it swiftly.
Well,
I mean, you're not sitting there reading comic books while you do it.
That's where shops have that tentative balance of you get that, an easy car. Like something like this. I'm sure Jody would just burn through this thing in a matter of minutes. You know?
Right.
Again, you've seen it multiple times. You're familiar with the scanner. You're familiar with the operation of the system. You're familiar with the parts. So, again, you have that familiarity. A new guy who's never seen it before is going to fumble around and look for help. Okay. So let's say you have a competent technician who can diagnose and he can get through it quick. But those guys, they often see the problem is they don't usually always get the easy jobs. They get the jobs that are the hard ones. Like, hey, three other guys looked at this and can't figure it out. What can you do with it? And now it's like, oh, crap. Let's assume nobody else ruined anything by cutting wires or, doing any crazy shenanigans.
Right.
Let's say that, which is not always the case.
Not always.
Now you're fake. And I have a friend who is a technician at Audi. And the guy was so darn good with diagnostics that he got a name as being the Audi guy for electrical. And this is going back like in the 90s when they were kind of plagued with that stuff.
You must have been really busy knowing if you worked for Audi.
Other dealerships would they figured out a way internally to be able to borrow him to another dealership to work on a car over there. And he got paid. And I asked him once, like, how does that work out? He goes, listen, sometimes I work so many hours of diagnostics over what you could reasonably charge a customer.
Right.
I said, so what do they do? I said, well, how do they pay you? He goes, well, I get paid. They worked out a deal where he gets paid an hourly rate and he gets paid extra. They did it internally. The company took the loss to pay him because they can't charge the customer past a reasonable amount. But the customer has to get that car fixed. So big, and that goes on, I'm sure, with everybody, all car companies and.
Or maybe the customer was in the process of looking for another car.
Well, and that's the thing. There's a lot of scenarios. So that's where you get into that slippery slope of those diagnostics that just don't pan out. And that's everybody's biggest nightmare,
No, it's true. And there has to be a certain ceiling, a figure that you can't just go past. You can't charge a customer thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to diagnose a problem, even if it is an Audi.
But that's what it costs. Yeah, but that's, exactly. Exactly right. So, diagnostics are a slippery slope. It's always hard.
And sometimes that's, to me, I know, it's a gamble. I always say it's a gamble. And there was one time where I was working on that little Sunbird and the cooling fan wasn't going on. And I noticed off the literally, it was a lucky moment, but I noticed off the plug of the coolant temp sensor, there was electrical tape wrapped up that just didn't look factory.
Yeah.
And I unraveled it, and someone, prior owner of the vehicle, had twisted the yellow wire, literally just twisted it together with no insulation, no solder, nothing. And it just it came undone. So, of course, the coolant temp sensor wasn't working. I'm like, oh, I saved myself the price of a coolant temp sensor because I was going to just go in the house and order one.
See, that's the good thing. With a scanner, you can read the temp sensor. You can read it at cold, and then you can let the engine heat up, and you can watch the sensor. You can see it on the scanner.
Right.
So you'll know
if
it has an output. That's another way of using that scanner. Brian says the best thing you hope for is that you could break even. I'm like, at best, a lot of times you don't break even. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bi-directional control those relays. And if they don't, I'm going to, the relays, that's a cheap enough part where you can say, hey, it's a relay for a couple of bucks. You can throw a relay in there and see if that solves.
Now most likely your chances are better to know. Because like we always talk about, new is never ever worked.
Right.
but you still have a better chance of success if you know that you have a good part in there. But here's a question I got to ask you. And I was thinking about this recently. I was listening to a financial guy on the radio, and he was talking about how hard it is to fix newer cars compared to older cars. Mm-hmm. He was saying things like, well, older cars were simple in the old days. Now, mind you, this is a financial guy I'm listening to on the radio. And I'm like pointing my finger at the radio, at the dashboard, going, how do you know that? How do you know? And the question I'm posing is to you, Ray. You, when we have scanners and pieces of equipment that can actually work components of vehicle in a bidirectional manner, when the old cars didn't have that, you needed a sixth sense. So my question to you is, what car is easier to fix?
Yeah.
A newer car because of the technology and the technology you have to fight the problems, or an older car where you needed talent and expertise and a sixth sense of your own?
Great question. There's a couple answers. The talent needed is needed in both cases, but it's a different, it's a different talent.
Yes. And I should have clarified that. You're right.
No, it's a great example. And I'll give you another example. Working, like we talked about a few weeks ago, on my Pontiac, I'm trying to work on that issue with the timing. And I got it on the run. I actually did make some, but again, I'm working in an old school car that has no electronics besides electronic ignition. And I can't plug in and have that car tell me, hey, tell me how you feel. What are you doing? I have none of that. So I have to use all those old skills, which is a lot of it is that gut feeling and things you built up from repeated repairs and, you know, things you've learned. And then just like I said, what your gut tells you, what should be right, what should be wrong. And then you look for clues and you kind of, you do it. And that's the way you worked on the older cars. And you built your own database. You were your own old data. And maybe you had a good mechanic and he was good at electrical. So you know what? You used him for electrical. Another guy was good at brakes. And then, you know, your buddy in the shop across the street or down the road was good with, maybe transmissions or good with suspension stuff. And you had that network. And today, it's a little different. It's definitely different. Is you have to be scanned. But now that the table is turned, because as we know, a lot of the young guys coming out, if they even get into the field, all want to just work with that scanner. They want to do the computer thing. They don't want to actually have to now take the second part and go get the ratchet and the wrench. And I got to take what out? What? No, they don't want to do that.
Yeah, they just want to be scan savvy.
Yeah.
It's the truth. It's the truth. And I realized that just by listening to this guy talk about how simple cars were in the old days. And I'm like, dude, you never picked up a wrench in your life. You picked up a pencil. You
maybe he tuned up. Maybe when you could tune up a car, maybe he tuned up his car back in the day.
You know, just by listening to people speak, by listening to people bloviate about what they know, you know who has worked on cars and who hasn't.
Well, then again, hey, listen, I've seen people like that. I'll say this, that I looked at the scoffed at them and said, what do you know? Hey, it just so happened that after the guy was a tinkerer in college, he went and got a college education, learned how to speak, learned how to write, and now he sounds like a professor. But back then, he was just another knucklehead with a half-inch wrench in his pocket and a Budweiser in his other hand, spinning out the champions and looking for 035 on the gauge, you know?
Yes. And there are people that scoff at you for doing this radio show.
Absolutely, Paul. I got that clip somewhere. It was on a promo. Exactly.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Hey, one of my favorites also is the bottom of the hour. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, I got a couple things to talk about. I have a story about ethanol, which we've all been dealing with in our cars. And it's not bad when you're driving your cars, but let that car sit for a while and see what happens to that damn ethanol and your lawnmower and your tractor and your yard equipment and your John Deere and all of that stuff. So we'll talk about that. And I want to ask you a question about highway technique. But first I need to know, do we have a bottom of the hour thing that you do?
That bottom of the hour thing that I do, which we call respectfully or not respectfully, the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. That's right. And because of Independence Day and the fact that we are involved in a safe and sane Independence Day, I hope, if you consider yourself an automotive expert but know nothing about fireworks. That's right. If you know your silver streaks, but not your silver jets. If you know your cherry bombs and know nothing about aerial bombs. If, let's see, I wrote it over here. If your knowledge of F-85s is greater than your knowledge of M-80s.
Ooh.
Or if you know everything about ground pounders, but nothing about ground spinners.
Oh, boy.
So if the only thing you can discuss with a fireworks expert is the result of a smoke bomb, you're part of the Motormouth Radio on a group of the owl.
Excellent. Very good. That's cool. All right. So we'll take our break. And I'll tell you what, white boy, I want you to play some funky music for us. We may get around to that in a minute or two. But
Wild Cherry.
And then,
Cherry Bomb.
You can have some Cherry Bomb. Joan Jett, right? The Runaways. And we'll be back with more Motormouth Radio on 90.3 WHPC. Keep it where you got it. This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CARSTAR Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
That wide track town, they've got the Pontiac Tigers. GTO and Pontiac Le Mans. These pussycats are tame when you own one. But if you say go sick 'em, your tiger understands and you'll go riding round in your Pontiac. Riding's a joy with a cat so alive. Riding round in your Pontiac. Pontiac for 1965.
An Asian proverb says, he who rides tiger often winds up inside one. American version, he who even looks at tiger often ends up inside one. If it's a genuine Pontiac tiger, like the GTO or Le Mans. These tigers have beautiful individual markings and a range of dispositions, from high-spirited to absolutely ferocious. So if you haven't priced a tiger lately, check the ones at your Pontiac dealers before the sun goes down.
Let the Motormouths help you with all your car questions at 516-572-7440.
And move into the groove, and just when it hit me, somebody turned around.
That's right, that's you. Play that funky music. Right.
I am playing the funky music.
Yes, and that dance routine was very, very nice. I like that. And the cowbell, you did great on the cowbell today. You've been practicing, I can tell you. You must have been using your head during the week with the wooden spoon like your mom used to do.
I'm going to turn off the bubble machine now.
You know, we were at this 4th of July gathering yesterday, and it was a band, Long Island band, it was very good, called 45 RPM.
Oh, cool.
And they're very, very good. And they, just a three-person band, a woman drummer slash singer, did great. I got to talk to her all about her drum kit and all, a lot of cool stuff. But they went seamlessly from, like, top 40. They did pop stuff. They did, you know, hits of the 50s, 60s, 70s. They threw in Allman Brothers. And they did play that funky music. They went into, like, disco. They played every three people. A guitar, an organ, and drums, and they nailed it.
Holy smokes,
very
I love it.
Very impressive. Yeah, we're thinking about booking them for something. I don't know, going to have a party for something. I don't know. Very cool.
Yes, a Guarino retirement party.
That's a good idea. So let me tell you a little story about ethanol. I got this off the Biz Buzz the other day.
Let me tell you a little story about it. Gallon of ethanol.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, we do have around here 10% ethanol in our gas.
Yes.
And for a long while now, they wanted to kick it up to 15 and 20%. And the car manufacturers said, whoa, wait, you can't do that. You know, our cars aren't calibrated for that. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, they'll be able to catch up to speed and do that. But the guys like us with older cars that are not calibrated for that are going to suffer greatly.
Yes, we will.
But nobody cares about us. And they don't care that all the lawnmowers won't work. They'll just sell you battery-powered lawnmowers now that'll take coal plants to make the power to make the batteries. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This just came down to there was a federal appeals court on Friday. They threw out a rule. There was a rule change that allowed for the sale of 15% ethanol in the summer months. I know on my FJ forum that I follow, one of the guys wrote in this week, and I didn't see where he was from, but he's not from our area. And he was all freaked out because his area is going to go to 10%. He goes, really? At 5? Now we're going to 10? Oh, my God. How's my car going to run? What am I going to do about gas? I want to write to him. Dude, don't worry about it. It'll be fine on 10. That's like the threshold. So they want to go to 15. This was going to happen. This was a big deal. But like I said, a federal court knocked it down. The decision deals a significant blow to the ethanol industry and the corn farmers, because there were deals made with the corn farmers to grow corn, not grow their other crops, grow corn so you can sell it to us to make ethanol out of.
Oh, boy.
This really? All went on years ago. And a lot of farmers took out the alfalfa and the beans and the squash and the succotash and said, okay, we'll plant corn. And they got federal money to do that. So they said, hey, why not? It's like, I'll take unemployment. Why go back to work?
Sure.
But they legitimately grew the crops. So they had anticipated the increased ethanol demand through year-round sales of the higher blend. Most gas sold in the United States is blended at 10%. But corn farmers and ethanol refiners now have pushed for the government to allow for the 15% blend, of course, because that helps. It's everybody wants to push their agenda for what's better
sure.
for them.
They can sell their crop to farmers, yes.
And the point of the story is that right now the federal appeals court has blocked that. So we're still safe for a while. I don't know for how much longer, but we're okay. So your lawnmower can still breathe a sigh of relief.
It's funny. We were watching, Dawn and I were watching Clarkson's Farm.
Yeah.
Have you seen this show?
No.
And I don't watch television.
I know.
We were stuck to this program to watch Jeremy Clarkson of Grand Tour and of Top Gear try his hand at farming.
Okay.
Which was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend this program. It's only 9 seasons, so we kind of binge watched it over the course of a week. But it was hysterical. And not only did you learn how interesting this man can be in his decision-making prowess, but we learned a lot about farming.
Wow, look at that. Our guest from last week, Dan Short, told me that him and his wife now run a farm.
And
he didn't
tell me credit.
Yeah, he didn't tell me what his what the crop is or what the main product is. But he says, yeah, it's a full-time job. And it's like, it is. I'm not surprised. Hey, speaking of that, I found out that this Thursday night, coming up on Plane and Traffic, Dan Short is the guest.
Lewis Lee.
So, we're gonna get another dose of Dan on Thursday night. So, if you want to tune into that, just
yes, I will.
You can go to MotorMouthRadio.com where there's a link to that show, or you can just Google it and find you could watch on YouTube or on. How else do people watch it?
Catching it on Facebook.
Okay, Facebook Live or
Facebook YouTube. Live. I love Facebook Live because it's bang right there. I just throw it on my phone, leave it there, and listen to you guys.
Okay. And we do it on Crowdcast, so that's another way of finding it. But yeah. So.
No, it's been interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, so we'll have more time with Dan, and we'll see what happens with that.
Dan was great last week too. It was nice. Yeah. He was a very good guest, a good interview, and appreciated him greatly. I love a guest that speaks clearly and is knows exactly what he's talking about.
Right.
Gets the answer out to you.
You can ask a question too and let him go. Right.
And he can wrap it up, which is cool.
I'll tell you what. Again, we're starting on, this is a trend we've had now for a little while, where the first show of each month has like no phone calls. So if you want to ask us a question, you can call at 516-572-744, blue light flashing, 7440, and we'll entertain that call. Let's see who we got on the line. We'll say hi. You're on the Motor Mouths, Ray and Chris.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you? Happy 4th.
What's up, Bob?
What's up, Bob?
So I had a happy 4th, guys. I wasn't able to finish the program last week, and my question to you for Dan Short was, what was his favorite Mustang build? And the answer is...
Oh, we sure as hell did ask him that question, too.
Yes.
And he said it was one of the early ones, a 60-something, Chris. Do you remember what he said exactly?
Yeah, he did. Oh, gosh.
Was it the Shelby?
I think... No, I don't
you
think
know,
it was
Bob,
the
you're going to
have
to go to MotorMouthRadio.com and listen to last week's show and find out for your damn self, because I don't remember. I don't remember what I did yesterday. You want me to remember last week?
I was... really anticipating you answering that. Okay. I know he's going to tell me. He's going to tell me, go to the archive. Don't bother me.
Well,
and happy 4th of July.
In perfect Motor Mouth Radio fashion, yes, I will just say it like it is. I'm just going
to
tell you.
Go to the archive. Don't bother us. Have a happy 4th of July.
But no, the caveat to that is you can always bother us. We'll always take your call and talk.
You know that.
You know. But yeah, it was one of the early Mustangs. I was kind of surprised because he did so many cars during his...
Yeah, he did.
And he's still doing them. So I was, anything he said probably would have surprised me. I thought it would have been one of the Corvettes that he did.
You know. He did seem excited about the question, Bob, just to let you know, when he answered it, he was excited about the answer. So, so that we did remember.
All right. I'll have to dig deep.
No, it's right on our homepage. The show is right there until this one goes up. That one's right on our homepage. So it's easy to find.
So you can check it now.
Yeah.
I want to thank you guys for another lovely program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for participating. We appreciate it as well.
That's always the case.
We'll catch up again.
All right, Bob. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye, guys.
All right.
Be safe. Have a safe holiday.
All right. So, Chris, let me ask you a question. I had an instance this morning. I have my own answer, but I want to know what yours is. For merging etiquette on the highway. Or phone etiquette when you have a caller.
Let's merge into a phone call.
Okay, let's go to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Great, Chris, Billy G.
Well, Billy, what's happening?
Hey, Billy Velvet! How are you, sir?
So, I'd like to opine regarding the Chrysler Nationals at Carlisle.
Okay.
Opine away, almighty!
So, I've been a regular at Carlisle for fall, spring, and Corvette Carlisle, which I'll be going to this August. So what you want to build into your price is that more than likely you're going to do it as an overnighter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So you got the hotel. You got gas. You got tolls. You have food, lodging, and then you have miscellaneous if you take the bride or you're stopping for knickknacks or whatever.
Correct.
So that's all built into your price. What you could do is why don't you go online and look at the vendor listing. And hopefully some of them are listed where you can actually make a deal pre-Carlisle.
Ah, right.
And then,
Billy, that is a great idea.
And then just make an arrangement just to pick the stuff up.
Yeah, even if you drove and met him, on the Delaware River line or something, or see where he is.
Right.
Because you're building in, and let me tell you, will you find other seats? You will find a boatload of stuff that's going to knock you, spin your head around if you were never there before for a particular.
But the 300 is a very specific kind of car. It's, it's like finding Yanko headrests,
It is. More than likely, you might find a shell with springs and then something that may have been a flood car or may have been an abandoned or a fire car, and then they're selling the guts, the skeleton.
Right.
And Billy, that's usually the case with the Chrysler material. The seats, the pleather is just, it disintegrates.
Yeah.
And it looks awful when it starts cracking. And it just cracks in the straight.
I know. My mom had a 61 Plymouth Savoy, brand new. And let me tell you, we kept Rako in business.
Right, the seat covers, right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that glittery material, that 60s that they used to weave in the thin glitter in there, whatever they call that stuff.
I know what you're doing. I just wanted to call and say if you're online and you're looking at seats, if you could find them, and the price is $600. And even if you made a deal, for 5.25, well, it's still going to cost you another $300 at least for the turnaround to go back and forth from Connecticut.
Right. Very true.
$800 seats in the long run.
Yeah.
And if you pay full boat at 6, you're paying 9.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely right. It's
good
sometimes
advice,
it's
though.
Worth it just to have them shipped. No, right. You're right.
Yeah.
When you start getting into those numbers, into those figures, when you start getting close to $1,000, it's probably better just to have those $300 or $400 or $500 seats shipped for the money.
Yeah, and with today's technology, he could do a walk around video and just show you, you know, where the weaknesses are. And
yeah, unless you're getting, you know, John Baldry, a guy who doesn't know how to use a cell phone, let alone a camera, and he's like, I don't know how to use this thing. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of those guys out there still who do not embrace and have not embraced technology.
Yeah,
you better hope that this guy with the seats is a second generation of the original owner, so at least he's plugged in to technology and you know.
All right. Our good friend Al, he said he's going to be a Carlisle walking the whole flea market, so you may bump into Al, Chris, and get some help.
But no, those are good points to make, Billy. That's really smart to actually reach out to the guy beforehand and see if you can strike a deal and then just go there, pick him up, and run him back. Because, for me, it's a four-hour trip there and obviously a four-hour trip back. So, like you say, a hotel may be in order, but you never know.
I mean, I've done it as day trips for years. And now this year, it's almost going to be like a mini vacation. I'm going to go Wednesday and come back Friday night.
Nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Very cool.
Search that Stinger hood for the 67.
Oh, right. And you made a deal on that ahead of time, right? So,
well, I know a guy that has it, and everyone says you're paying crazy money. Listen, new old stock. You know what? It nothing closes like new old stock. Nothing sounds better than new old stock.
Right.
Yeah, as opposed to this aftermarket press, you know. Yeah,
you get what you pay for.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been putting the shekels away for this hood anyway. So, you know, and I just sold the one that I bought a year ago because I thought I was going to get into the body shop sooner than later. So I said, you know what? Let me buy you. They fit better in the. They fit better anyway in the cowl, you know.
Right.
Because when they come out of the mold, you always got to file them around and play with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
But I just wanted to send the best to you two, as always, all right?
Thank you, Bill. Same to you. It's a pleasure talking to you, Billy.
Yes, always
guys.
A pleasure.
Good luck.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
Take care.
Be safe. Bye-bye. 516-256. Nope. What's the number again? 516-572-7440.
That's the one.
Well, I don't know what the other number was.
So I know what the other number was. So real quick, on you merge onto a highway. You know, I was doing this this morning. So you're coming up, and as you merge into a three-lane parkway in what we call over here, we're not, there's another call. So we're going to have to do it. See what I asked for? I got to be careful because I asked for it.
Yes.
All right. We'll go to the phones and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hello, gentlemen. Good afternoon and a happy 4th of July to you all.
Yeah, what's happening?
Well, I want to speak to the ethanol issue.
Let's go.
When I first got down here into Florida, I was at a car cruise-in, and immediately this guy starts talking about the ethanol problems and issues, and he rebuilds carburetors, and all he does is rebuild carburetors because of ethanol problems.
Yeah.
I said, have you ever used Startron?
Hmm.
He said, what? I said, Startron. I said, it was originally formulated for marine use, I said, but I have 3, 4, 5, 6 cars, whatever, and from living up north, I used it constantly. And the car would sit for over 6 months at times and fire right up once you were ready to go. Never had an issue whatsoever with the ethanol problems. No, that's impossible. That's impossible. He wanted to argue with me for, like, as long as I'd stand there and listen to him argue. I pretty much ended the conversation by saying, listen, just try Startron. Give it a try. See what you feel. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. I said, but if I'm not, you found out something new, and I realize you rebuild carburetors, and it might put a dent in your rebuilding, but, you know, then maybe that's why you're so hard on ethanol issues and don't feel that there's anything that can combat it.
Yeah.
But I swear by Startron, not at it, and I think it's an awesome product, and I've used it for many years now with great results. All my cars, I put it in just for maintenance, if nothing else.
The views and opinions of the callers of this show are not... No, actually, they are the views and opinions of the... Because this must run in a family. As everybody knows who's listened to this show, I've been the biggest StarTron proponent for years.
I just like your disclaimer. I thought that was great there.
I mean, I literally keep the stuff everywhere, and I've had such great luck with it. But I will say this, Skip, that what happens in my own car, which doesn't get driven every day, or sometimes it's driven for a week or whatever, my Pontiac, I find that when I come back to that car, all the fuel that's been north of the fuel pump in the fuel line into the carburetors is gone. It evaporates because of the ethanol.
Wow.
Yeah. So I actually bought this one-way valve that I've yet to install to kind of keep the fuel from draining back. But I don't know. That's this guy.
See, now I've had that issue in my Nomads for forever. And I always thought, well, the white Nomad particularly, not the purple one so much, but the white one I always did, and I always felt that it was more of a fuel pump problem where it was bleeding back down because I have a glass filter on that, and I could see the fuel when I would go to start the car. And if it hadn't been started in quite a while, the bowl would be empty, and I know I had to pump the hell out of it a few times to get fuel up to the carburetor, and then it fired right up.
Right.
But I did have that issue where it does bleed back in the white car, but not so much in the purple car where I don't have an inline filter right there like that. So I don't know if that's the difference.
Well, yeah, fuel pumps do have an anti-drain back valve, and I have had some that went bad. You can actually test that. There's ways of doing it, but I figured, like you said, it takes a few extra seconds. I'm not using an electric pump. In the Fiat, I do that, and I took that car out the other day, and I knew. I turned the car on, threw the electric pump on, and it pumps through the mechanical pump. Gave it about 30 seconds until I heard the pump slow down, and then the car started up. So,
well, you hit a good point there, too, because I just realized the white Nomad has the mechanical pump, and the purple Nomad has the electric fuel
pump. There you go, yeah.
So when I crank the key on the purple Nomad, I always wait a couple seconds for the pump to engage and go through. I tap the pedal once, fire it, and it goes right off. And the white car, knowing that the fuel is drained back, I get in and I'll crank it a little, pump it a few times, pump it, crank it, and then finally it fires and it goes and I'm good to go.
I'll tell you this, in my Pontiac, I looked at it as, it was annoying. It was annoying me and I was going to do something about it. I said, yeah, I should drive the car more is what I should do. But what I realized was, as I'm cranking it, without it firing, the oil pressure's coming up. And I'm getting I'm like 85 pounds of oil pressure. So I'm basically pre-oiling the engine before the fuel gets enough fuel to start. I said, that's a good thing. I don't have to start it and then watch the oil pressure come up. The oil pressure's already up. So I'm looking at probably saving the engine. So.
And if you have an alternator with an exciter and whatever, you're getting that fired up and everything else. So you're killing more birds with one stone in that regard.
That's a good point. A lot of guys use the one wire. I don't. I hardwired mine in. I did a 12SI and just hardwired it because, I had the diagram, so I did it. But a lot of guys use that the one wire alternators, and they are self-exciting. So that's an excellent point. People don't realize that. Those things don't put out any kind of current when you first start them. They need RPM.
And in that regard, a lot of times, especially, with people that go to a fast idle at first, they're real quick to kick it down.
Yeah.
And if they do kick it down, they're defeating the purpose of that alternator, and they're not getting the perfect use out of it until they start driving it.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of things that the industry doesn't tell you these things about those little gizmos like the one-wire alternators.
Those self-exciters are interesting.
And the hobby of hot rodding and so forth is a wealth of information that the general public usually isn't privy to because they don't get their hands dirty and they don't experience all the little nuances of what things need to work properly and how they're supposed to work. And they wouldn't know left or right or one wire from 10 wire. You know what I mean?
Now, so, I'll even say this. A lot of shop owners that I know and guys that do restorations, they put these things in, and they don't understand them either. They just know, hey, it works, so we're just going to install it, and we're going to save like 2 hours of wiring time. So that's what we do.
Well, speaking of wiring and shops that don't know what they're doing, I had the Purple Nomad done by a shop that really didn't know what they're doing because, as a matter of fact, a piece of trivia: the car right now is in Dix Hills.
Oh, really?
And it's being worked on by my buddy Mike with the number 3 replica, Bernhardt replica, the electrician, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He's had the whole dash out of the car, the fuse box out of the car. He said it was the biggest rat nest he's ever seen. He said he didn't even know how the car was running half the time. He said connections were falling apart. Wiring was not done properly. Grounds weren't right. Now, this was a car that was totally gutted, had a complete brand-new harness for the car installed where all you had to do was connect the dots. There was no need for extra wiring or extra connectors or anything else. It was all in the kit. But for some reason, they felt they had a better plan, a better idea than the manufacturer of the harness, and did things that he can't even explain. He just keeps scratching his head saying, I can't believe why they would do this, how they did that. And the big thing, he said, just he moved my fuse box for me because, you know, in the Tri-5 Chevys, they're up in the fender well on the left side.
Yeah.
And you can't get up there. I personally can't get up there to see it or anything else. Actually, I had my wife Irene up there a couple weeks ago trying to check the fuse for me, which was pretty hysterical anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it would have been funnier if I was under there because I'd still be there now.
Yeah.
But you should see he's moving it onto the firewall next to the steering column where I'll have access. I'll just put it on a lift, raise it, and I can see it eye level if ever it
is. I'll tell you, working on some of the, like I was working on a Grand National, this 87 GN, that's another one. You got to lay down up backwards with your head under the, I had to do the brake pedal on that thing. And there's the fuse box right next to it all the way up in God's country. It's like, how'd they build this car? They built it, brake pedal, fuse box first, then they assembled the car around it.
Well, you know that, as William always said, you know, the engineers plan these things out. It looks beautiful on paper. And then in reality, it's like, who the hell do you expect to get to these things or work on them or have anything to do in a good fashion? You know, they don't even look that far ahead, you know, because they make the design, they make it work, and they say that's it.
Now
you deal with it.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Skip, thanks for that info. We're going to have to run because we are getting to the end of the show, and we got to get the heck out of here. And
all right, have a great day. Enjoy, be safe, and the best to everybody.
All right, good luck with the car. We'll talk soon.
Yeah. Take care, Skip. Right. Good talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye, Chris.
So long.
Bye.
All right, you know, you get these war stories from everybody. I happen to know this shop. I know where that car was done, and he's right. That guy does not do the right stuff. So,
oh boy.
And those stories have come back many, many times from other people, and it's so sad because these guys are not charging you like a discount rate, you know.
Right.
They're charging you top New York dollars. Right.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. So we're going to have to get back to that question next week, I'm assuming.
Yeah, right? I have a note. Well, it's a generic thing. We could talk about that. It's one of those, like, kind of quality of life things for driving. Also, I'm scouting a couple of guests. I was hoping to have one today. We didn't. But also, a guy from South Main Auto Repair, another Eric, who's upstate New York, way up by, like, the Finger Lakes region. He's another contemporary of, like, Eric the Car Guy. Does the same kind of thing, a lot of diagnostic stuff. I'm going to scout him and see if we can get him in, and we'll do that. So before we get out of here, what do we always tell our friends and people who hang around?
Always be nice to yourself, exciters. Watch those smoke bombs, and don't follow us home.
Right. Excellent. So, Chris, for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Motor Mouth Radio, signing out. We'll be back next week. Have a happy and safe 4th. Don't blow yourself up. And I'm going to go start some charcoal. Chris?
See you, bye.
See you next week. All right. Bye-bye.